So, you're kind of a pain in the ass. Why'd Kyler take you in?
They'd been on the trail for a week, and if Yuli wasn't the best company, at least she was more interesting than the horses and the trees and the little villages they had to avoid. He wasn't making conversation. She was gathering much information. Kyler was coming to kill her.
He did it because he loves me. Someday he's going to marry me.
Yes, yes, I know. But he couldn't have loved you before he knew you, could he? You said that when he took you out of the castle was the first time you saw him?
I thought he was my real father at first.
Who are your real parents?
My father's name is Durzo, but he's dead now. Kyler won't talk about him. I think my mother is Mama Kay. She always looked at me funny when we stayed with her.
V had to grab the back of her saddle to steady herself. Nisos, that was it. She knew Yuli looked familiar. Yuli was Durzo and Mama Kay's daughter. No wonder they'd concealed her. It also explained why Kyler had taken her in. Inexplicably, the thought made her ache. She couldn't imagine taking in one of Hugh's bastards. For that matter, she couldn't imagine Hugh caring about one of them. Suddenly, Yuli was twice as valuable to the God King. Holding Yuli would mean controlling Mama Kay. Maybe it would be enough to free V from his clutches. But V knew better. The God King rewarded his servants well. Any vice she had, she would be allowed to indulge to satiety. He'd give her gold, clothes, slaves, whatever she wanted. But he'd never give her freedom. She'd proven herself too valuable for that. The more V learned about Kyler, the more she despaired. She needed Yuli to talk because she needed to know everything about her enemy she could. Everything she learned was from a 12-year-old girl who had a crush on the man. But V was good at sifting truth from opinion. Still, Kyler was sounding more and more...
Fuck!
She wasn't going to think about that again. It just left her feeling worse. Damn this trail. Damn this long trip. One more week and she could wash her hands of this. Maybe she wouldn't even stick around for her payday, much as she deserved it. She'd drop off the girl with a note about what she'd done, and she'd disappear. She'd killed Jarl. She'd deliver Kyler and Mama Kay to the God King. Surely he wouldn't waste his resources sending someone after her then. Even if he did, he wouldn't come after her with the fury he would have if she betrayed him. She could disappear. There were only a few people she feared, and all of them were too valuable to be sent after her. One of them was Kyler, but he wouldn't survive long. Maybe he'd killed Roth Ursul, 38 Highlanders and some witches. Yuli seemed to know a lot about that. But he'd never survive the God King. V would head to Seth, or Ladesh, or deep into the mountains of Kura, where her red hair wouldn't be so unusual. She'd never spread her legs for another man, and she'd never take another contract. She didn't know what a normal life looked like, but she'd give herself time to figure it out. After this. She pulled the scrap of note she'd taken from Kyler's house and read it again.
Aline, I'm sorry. I tried. I swear I tried. Some things are worth more than my happiness. Some things only I can do. Sell these to Master Barari and move the family to a better part of town. I will always love you.
Hey, Ugly. What did Aline and Kyler fight about?
I think it was about how the bed wasn't creaking.
Well, that's normal enough. Was that all?
Why? What's it mean?
Fucking. Men and women fight about it all the time.
What's fucking?
So V told her as explicitly as possible, and Yuli looked more and more horrified.
Oh, does it hurt?
Sometimes.
It sounds gross.
It is. It's messy and sticky and sweaty and smelly and gross. Sometimes it even makes you bleed.
Oh, why do girls let them do that?
Because men make them. That's why they fight about it.
Kyler wouldn't do that. He wouldn't hurt Aline.
Then why'd they fight about it?
He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't. I don't think they ever did it anyway, because the bed never creaked and Aunt Mia said it would. But Aunt Mia said it was fun.
Whatever. Is that all they thought about?
She wanted him to sell his sword. The sword Durzo gave him. He didn't want to. But she said it proved he still wanted to be a wet boy. But he didn't. He really wanted to be with us. It made him really mad when she said that.
So he wanted out too. That's what he meant in the note when he said he tried. He tried to leave.
Nice off.
Kyler might not even know she'd taken Yuli. She didn't know if that was a good thing or not. It did explain why he'd gone charging past them in the fog that morning, though. He would have been sure she'd return to Sonaria as quickly as possible. Several hundred paces ahead, V saw the forest change. No, not change. It transformed as abruptly as if the earth had been split with an axe. On the near side, the forest was like what they'd been riding in for days. On the far side, enormous sequoias grew. They must be near Doris Bend. It didn't mean much to her, but it looked like the riding would be easier under those great trees. There was almost no undergrowth in a forest that old. They were only 50 paces from the sequoias when an old woman stepped out from the trees in front and to one side of them. She looked as startled as V felt. She was holding a glowing sheet of gold in her hands. Glowing gold could only mean magic. The woman was a mage.
Stop!
V snapped her body back in the saddle and yanked the reins of Yuli's horse out of her hands. As she sat back up, she jabbed her heels in and looked toward the mage. The woman was running heavily, awkwardly, and not toward V and Yuli. She was running away from the old forest, and she had flung aside the glowing gold sheet. What the hell? It was strange, but not so strange that V stopped. In all the world, the only people she had to fear were wet boys, witches, and mages. The horses charged for the forest, almost throwing Yuli out of the saddle. The mage was only 30 paces away now, almost even with him. She ran a few more steps, and V could have sworn that the woman was emerging from something like a vast, nearly invisible bubble covering the forest. The woman brought up her hands.
Ulmator Canus!
V dropped her body as far on the opposite side of the horse as she could. Yuli flew off the horse. There was no hesitation. A wet boy doesn't hesitate. A wet boy acts, even if it's the wrong action. V couldn't stay still. It made her a target. She dug her heels into her horse's flanks again. The horse lunged forward and promptly crashed into the ground, its front legs cut out from under it. V slapped into the ground hard, her body flipping over as she skidded on her back. Her head kissed an iron-hard root, and black spots swarmed before her eye. V got on her hands and knees and tried to stand.
I'm sorry. I can't let you do that.
Arias Vulcor!
It was two small cuts, a line along the ribs and a matching line across the inside of his arm. Neither was deep. The knife had cut skin but not muscle. Even together, they were nothing. A clean bandage and some fresh air wouldn't have seen heal in a few days. But in the hole, nothing was clean. Fresh air was only a memory. Logan recognized the signs, but there was nothing he could do. He was hot and cold already, shivering and sweating. The odds were he wouldn't come out of the fever. After all the time he'd spent in the hole, he was a shadow of his former self. Cheeks sunken, eyes bright, face skeletal, his tall frame now skin and bone. If he survived, he could get worse yet, he knew. For all that he'd starved, Logan still didn't have the malnourished, emaciated look that those who had been in the hole for years had. His body was clinging to its strength with a stubbornness that surprised him. But the fever cared nothing for that. It would take days at the least to fight off the fever. Days of total vulnerability.
Natasa, tell me again about the resistance.
The younger Grayson daughter had a haunted look in her eyes. She didn't respond. She was looking across the hole at Finn. who was gnawing on sinews to add to his rope.
Yatasa!
They move around. There are a number of estates that welcome them in the east, especially. Especially the Gyres. Even the Lycanoct have helped.
Bastards.
Bastards who are our enemy's enemy.
And our numbers are growing?
Our numbers are growing. We've been conducting raids, small groups, going and doing anything they can to hurt the Calidorians. But my sister wouldn't let us try anything big yet. Count Drake has set up informants for us in every village in Eastern Cenaria.
Count Drake? Oh, wait, I asked that before, didn't I?
She didn't respond. Her eyes were still on Finn. Finn had killed four of the newcomers in the last 3 days. 3 days? Or was it four now? Count Drake was part of the resistance. That was great. Logan hadn't known if the man had made it out alive.
I'm glad Kyla didn't kill him, too.
Who?
Count Drake. He betrayed me. He's the reason I'm down here.
Count Drake betrayed you?
No, Kyla. Dressed all in black. Called himself the Night Angel.
Kyler Stern is the Night Angel.
He was working for Calidor all along.
No, he wasn't. The Night Angel's the only reason there's a resistance at all. I was there. We were all herded into the garden and he saved us. Terra offered him whatever he wanted to escort us out of the castle. But he only cared about you. He left us to try to save you, Logan.
But he killed Prince Elaine. He was the one who started all this.
Lady Jadwin killed Elaine Gunder. She's been given a portion of his estates as her reward.
It didn't seem possible. After everything had been stripped away from him, Natasa was giving him back his best friend. He missed Kyla so much.
And Sarah Drake? Was she with you too? She's part of the resistance? Kyla saved her?
She's dead.
Did she suffer?
Natasa looked down.
Sarah.
His fiancée not so long ago. She seemed part of another life, another world. He had loved her once, or thought he loved her. How could he have loved her when she'd barely crossed his mind in all the time he'd been down here? She'd betrayed him. She'd slept with his best friend, Prince Elaine Gunder, when she had never even slept with him, the man she said she loved. Had that been it? Had that betrayal extinguished his feelings for her? Or had he ever loved her at all? He thought that he was finally understanding love on his wedding night.
Everyone who is infatuated thinks he understands love.
But Logan couldn't help it. What he'd felt for Janine Gunder, the 15-year-old girl he'd been so sure was too young and immature for him, had seemed like love. Maybe he'd been snatched away before he'd had time to see her flaws, but Janine Gunder, Janine Geyer, his wife, if only for a few tragic hours, was the woman who had haunted his thoughts. He dreamed of her in the moments before sleep yielded to the hard stone and cruel stink and howling and heat of the hole. Her full smile, her bright eyes, her golden curves in candlelight, as he had seen her just once, so briefly, before the Calidoran soldiers had broken into the room, before Roth had cut her throat.
Oh, God.
Everything was fuzzy and getting fuzzier. He had held off grief for so long, but he couldn't do it anymore.
I'll be with you soon.
That's what he had told Janine. It was true now. He was going to die here. He already was dying. He looked at Natasa's face and she was weeping with him. The poor girl. She'd been captured, betrayed by someone in the resistance, and put down here with these monsters. Logan didn't know how much she wept for him and how much she wept for herself. He didn't blame her. She had to know that once he was gone, the Holers would take her. Even Lily was crying. He wouldn't have imagined she was capable of it. Why was she crying? Was she afraid that once the Holders had Natasa, who was younger and prettier, that she'd lose her power and her position? That she would be killed? Looking at Lily's face, Logan hated himself for the cynicism of that thought. He'd been down here too long. The look on her face wasn't fear. It was love. Lily wasn't weeping for herself. She was weeping for him.
Who am I to deserve such devotion? I'm not worthy of this. Help me up.
Lily looked at Natasa, and her tears ceased. Everyone in the hole was looking at Logan now. Some with curiosity, some with hunger. Finn looked positively jubilant.
All right, you fucks. Listen up. I've kept a little secret from you because I didn't know what fine, upstanding felons you all are. I've kept a little secret that might make a big difference.
Yeah, we know. Our little king thinks he's Logan Goya. He thinks he really is the king.
Finn, there's two good reasons for you to shut your shithole. First, I'm dying. I've got nothing to lose. But if you keep that tooth-filled anus of yours shut, I'll die, and you won't have to do a damn thing. But if you keep talking, I'll come kill you. I might be weak, but I'm strong enough to drag your poxy asshole down the hole if I don't mind falling in myself. Believe me, if we start fighting, there's more than one person down here who will make sure we both go in.
And the second reason...
If you don't shut up, it'll be your fault that I threw this down the hole.
Logan reached inside his belt and pulled out an iron key.
It's the key to the grave.
The holers started pressing closer, and Logan staggered toward the hole. He held the key out over the darkness and swayed back and forth in not completely feigned dizziness.
I'm feeling real sick, real dizzy. So if you all want this key to go in its little home up there, you'll listen real close.
How could you have held onto it all this time? We could have escaped months ago.
Shut up, Nick!
Logan looked around, trying to see where the greasy Caladoran Duke was, but the faces were a blur.
If we want to use this key, we have to work together. Do you all understand? If one person does the wrong thing, we all die. And the worst thing is, we have to trust each other. It will take three of us to reach the lock. We do this my way, or I throw away the key. If we do this my way, we all get out. Understand? Even you, Finn. Once we get up into the moor, I have a plan that will get at least half of us out. Maybe all of us. They've been doing construction at the other end of this tunnel. I think I can use that, as long as we kill Gorky before he raises the alarm. But you all have to do exactly what I say.
He's crazy.
It's our only chance. I'm in.
Everyone looked at Tats in wonder. It was the first time anyone had heard the tattooed Lord Rukari speak.
Good. Now we need three people to make a tower to reach the gate. Nasha will be the base... I'll be the second, and Lily will unlock the gate. From there, we've got two options. And which one we choose is up to Finn.
Finn looked even more suspicious.
First option. All of you who are light enough and strong enough to climb up the three of us can get out. But I won't let Finn climb out. So me and Nasha and Finn will die.
Anyone's going... I'm going. You're not...
Shut the fuck up, Finn!
Second option. Finn gives Lily his rope. She can tie it to something up there, and we all climb out. Finn, it's your rope, so it's your choice. Oh, and if I don't get out, I'm not telling you my plan to get out of the mall.
Everyone looked at Finn.
You can use a rope, but if you want to use my rope, I'm going to be part of the tower. I'll open the grate.
Forget it. No one here trusts you. If you get out, you'll leave us.
Well, I'm not climbing up that toothy freak. You want my rope? I want to be part of the tower, and that's final.
Fine. I'll be the base. You be the second. Lily opens the grate.
Logan handed her the key.
Lily, if Finn tries anything, you throw that key down the hole. Got it?
If anyone tries anything, I throw the key down the hole. I swear by all the gods of hell and pain and the hole.
We do this one at a time. I'll tell you who goes next.
Logan drew the knife and handed it to Natasa.
Natasa, anyone who comes close before their turn, you stick them with this, all right? Natasa will be the first out. She'll tie the rope to something up there so we can all climb out. Finn and me will be last. But everyone's going to get out. We've paid for our crimes.
Finn walked around the hole, uncoiling the sinew rope from around his body. He rolled it into big loops with an almost frightening ease. He claimed to have strangled 30 people before he was caught, not counting islanders and women. Underneath the ropes, he looked like anyone who'd been in the hole for a long time. Scrawny, skin deep brown with dirt, reeking, his mouth bloody, sometimes from the scurvy that every long-time holer suffered. He stepped close to Logan.
We'll settle us later.
Finn took the coiled rope and settled it around his neck. Logan wiped the sweat off his brow. He wanted to kill the man now. If he grabbed the rope and shoved, maybe. Maybe. It wasn't worth the risk. He was too weak, too slow now. He should have tried this plan earlier. But earlier, Finn would never have come this close to him. Finn would have expected Logan to try to kill him any other time, and before Logan had regained the knife, trying it would have made him too vulnerable. Bracing himself against the wall with his hands, Logan squatted. Finn edged close to him, sneering.
Fucking buggers, puppies want a snake or picking me bits the whole time I'm above him.
He finally put a foot on Logan's thigh, stepped onto his back, and then up onto his shoulders, walking his own hands up the sheer wall. Surprisingly, the weight wasn't that bad. Logan thought he could make it. He just had to lock his knees and lean on the wall, and he could make it. There was no way he'd be able to climb up the rope on his own strength, but maybe his friends would pull him out. If he went out last, he'd tie the rope around himself, and Lily and Nash and Natasa could pull him out.
Hurry!
You're too damn tall! Can you squat down?
Logan shook his head.
Shit. Fine. Ask Nash to help. You're the only one he listens to.
Ask him what?
To lift me.
Oh, Nash, pick her up.
Nasty, you big bird.
No, Nash, not like that.
It took some coaching, but finally Nash understood and squatted beside Logan while Lily climbed up onto his back and then stood on his shoulders. Then she put the key in her teeth and started trying to transfer over. Logan was much taller than Nasher, so Lily had to step up onto Logan's shoulder, where Finn was already standing. The uneven weight made Logan sway.
Ah, stay still, you stupid fucking twist!
Natasa put a hand on Logan's shoulder, trying to brace him. Logan felt cold wash over him.
Just hurry!
Lily's weight pressed down again on his left shoulder. Then weight shifted back and forth above him as she and Finn tried to balance. Logan couldn't tell what they were doing. He squeezed his eyes shut and held on to the wall.
You can do this! You can do this!
The weight shifted suddenly, hard to the right. Logan sagged and then fought, his right leg shaking with the exertion. The burden suddenly lightened. Logan squinted up and saw that Lily was on Finn's back, and she had grabbed the grate above her with one hand, stabilizing herself and taking some of her weight.
Oh, where are all my little puppets? How I do so love to fuck your world over.
They all knew whose voice that was. Gorky was coming. The witching hour had come. An icy wind scoured clouds through the mountain's teeth. It was cold, too cold for snow. The wind cut through cloaks and gloves, made swords stick in their scabbards, made the men shiver at their posts. The clouds looked like phantoms scurrying over the killing fields and rushing up and over the walls. Thick, wide braziers of coal that were burning all along the walls did nothing to stave off the chill. The heat was carried off and swallowed into the night. Beards froze and muscles stiffened. The swirling, racing clouds were thick enough and obscured the moon and stars so fully that they'd be lucky to see 50 paces out. The archers would only be useful to about that distance anyway with this wind. Solon had taken a position on the opposite side of the first wall from Voss, hoping that if worst came to worst, he'd be able to help the men without Voss's interference. The waiting was the worst. Like every soldier, Solon hated the waiting. It was good to be an officer when it came time to wait. You could fill your time encouraging the men to stand strong. It kept you from having the time to worry yourself. Solon thought he saw something through the swirling clouds and darkness. He stiffened, but it was nothing. He turned to the men nearest him.
It's time! Remember, don't look directly at her!
Solon pulled out the beeswax plugs he'd been rolling in his fingers to warm and jammed one in his ear, then paused. He thought he saw something again. But it wasn't the outline of a man or a horse, but an enormous square. No, it was nothing. Around him, other men were leaning forward, squinting into the darkness. Then his skin began prickling.
Do any of you know how to tie knots well?
The soldiers exchanged puzzled looks.
I practically grew up on a fishing boat, sir. I reckon I know about every knot there is.
Solon grabbed the coil of rope tied to a bucket that the soldiers used to refill the water cisterns at the top of the wall.
Tie me up.
Sir?
The magic was thickening.
Tie me to the wall. Tie me so I can't move. Take my weapons.
Sir, I don't...
I'm a mage, damn it. I'm more susceptible to what she's... Damn it. She's coming.
Soldiers were turning, staring at him.
Don't look at her. Don't believe what you see. Damn it, man, now. The rest of you, shoot.
The former sailor looped the rope around Solon expertly. In moments, Solon's hands were tied behind his back, secured to his feet, and only after that was his cloak bound around him so he wouldn't freeze. Then the man bound him to the winch they used to raise the bucket.
Now a blindfold and my other earplug.
The man had bound him facing over the wall. Solon should have told him to make sure he couldn't face her.
Hurry, man!
But the soldier didn't respond. He was looking over the wall into the darkness, as was everyone else.
Ilana! Ellie! Is that you?
His face flushed and his eyes dilated. He threw his cloak off, then he jumped off the wall. He was halfway to the ground before he flailed wildly, suddenly aware, trying to find something to save himself. The rocks broke his body cruelly. There was a sudden flurry of arrows as men began obeying Solon's earlier command to start shooting as soon as anything strange happened. The fog billowed, and he saw the vast wagon being drawn forward. Surrounded by Caladoran soldiers, pulled by six aurochs, Solon's heart leapt as he saw a dozen Caladorans cut down by the first wave. The aurochs took several arrows and didn't even falter, but the rain of arrows was slowing. Across the wall, Solon saw men flinging themselves off the wall. Others were shaking their heads, each lost in a private vision, bows held in limp hands.
Don't look. Don't look, Solon. Don't look. I won't believe it. Just a quick...
The magic roared past him as if it were flying at tremendous speed. And then calm. He blinked. He was standing in the Hall of Winds. The magnificent jade throne shone green like the waters of Hokkai Bay. Upon the throne sat a woman he barely recognized. Kitty Wariyamo had been 16 when he'd left the islands, though he'd known from the times he'd played with her when they were both young that she would be beautiful. Her transformation had made him awkward. She'd reproached him for avoiding her, but he'd had no choice. He knew he had to leave forever, but he'd never been prepared for what the sight of her would do to him. 12 years later, she had grown in grace and confidence. If he hadn't known her so well, he never would have seen the slight apprehension in her eyes.
Will he still think I'm beautiful?
He did. Her olive skin still glowed. Her black hair poured around her shoulders like a waterfall. Her eyes still gleamed with intelligence and wisdom and mischief. Perhaps there used to be less wisdom there and more mischief, but those lips looked like they still held three lifetimes of smiles. And if she had the faintest smile lines around her eyes and lips, what a tribute to a life well lived. To him, they were a mark of distinction. His eyes swept over her body, clad in light blue silk nagika, cut to emphasize the perfection of each curve, bound at the waist by a narrow belt of gold, the silk looped up over one shoulder. Her stomach was still flat, athletic. There were no stretch marks. Katie had never borne children. His eyes lingered on her exposed breast. Perfect. She was perfect.
If you've been on Midkiru so long, you've forgotten what breasts look like, my prince.
Solon blushed. After so many years of seeing women treat ordinary parts like they were erotic, and erotic parts like they were ordinary, he was thoroughly confused.
I apologize, Your Majesty.
Remembering himself, he tried to kneel, but something was interfering with his motion. It didn't matter. All that mattered was before him. He couldn't take his eyes off her.
You've been a hard man to find, Solonariwan.
Just so long now.
The Empire needs you, Solonariwan. I won't make any demands of you besides the producing of an heir. And if you require rooms for a mistress, it will be arranged. The Empire needs you, Solon. Not just for your family, for you. I need you. I want you, Solon. I want you as I wanted you 12 years ago and as I wanted you before that. But now I want your strength, your fortitude, your companionship, your...
My love. You have it, Katie. I love you. I always have.
I've missed you.
I've missed you. I'm afraid I was never able to explain why I had to leave.
She stepped close to him and put a finger on his lips. Her touch sent shockwaves through him. His heart thundered against his ribs. Her very scent suffused him. His eyes couldn't find a place to rest as he looked at her. Every beautiful line and curve and color and tone led to another and another. Smiling, she put a hand on his cheek. She had that same uncertain, wavering look that she'd had that last day when she kissed him and he'd nearly torn her clothes off. She kissed him, and her lips were all the world. She started tentatively, just touching that exquisite softness against his lips, and then drawing him out. She was suddenly aggressive, just as she had been that day, as though her passion had only been building for all the time he was gone. Her body pressed up against him.
Come to my chambers. This time I swear my mother won't break in on us.
She climbed up a tall step and looked at him over her shoulder as she took a few steps away, her hips swaying. She grinned devilishly and brushed the nagika strap off her shoulder. He tried to step up after her, but he slipped back to his place on the floor. Katie slipped the gold belt off her waist and dropped it carelessly. Solon strained to climb up that damned step.
I'm coming.
She shimmied, and the nagika dropped to the floor in a silk puddle. Her body was all bronze curves and shining waterfalls of black hair. He couldn't breathe. He'd thrown this away once, and he wasn't going to give it up now. Katie was just down the hall, smiling, the light playing over her lean body, her long, long legs, her slim ankles. He climbed back to his feet and strained against the ropes again. Katie wouldn't smile when he was choking to death.
Katie wouldn't be like this at all.
Mannerisms weren't similar to the girl he had known. They were exactly the same, fitted to an older face. A woman who'd been a queen for 10 years wouldn't let down all the barriers that fast. She was everything he'd hoped or imagined. The real Katie would be furious with him. The vision disappeared all at once, and Solon was back on the wall. He was staring over the edge, only the ropes keeping him from falling to his death. Around him, men were dying horribly. One's stomach had swollen to 3 times its normal size, and he was still reaching into the air as if shoving food down his throat. Another was purple, screaming at someone who wasn't there, but he was no longer screaming words. His voice was a wreck, and every once in a while he coughed and blood flew out his mouth, but he never stopped screaming. A man was beating the stone wall with his hands as if they were attacking him. His hands were bloody stumps, ruined, but he never stopped. Others were lying down, dead, with no indication of what had killed them. Many had killed themselves by one means or another, but some had been scorched with magic or exploded. The wall ran red with their already freezing blood. The gate had been blown apart while he'd been in his trance, and dark figures were marching toward them now, driving the team of Aurochs pulling the enormous wagon. It was Kali.
Has Dorian gone mad yet? That was my little gift, you know.
Solon looked, but couldn't see the source of the voice. He wasn't sure it was coming from inside his own head.
He's completely cured, actually.
So he is alive.
Solon wanted to crumple. They thought Dorian was dead, or at least they didn't know.
Let's get this over with.
You've been told many lies in your life, Solonarimon. They lied to you when you were growing up. They lied to you at Shokendi. They stole from you. I'm not going to offer you power, because the truth is, I can't give you power. The Vir doesn't come from me. That's just another lie. I wish it did. The truth is, the Vir is natural, and it's vastly more powerful than your pitiable talent. The truth is, Dorian's talent was weak before he used the Vir, and you know how powerful his talent is now.
It's enslaving. Meisters are like drunks looking for the next glass of wine.
Some of them, yes. The fact is, some people can't handle drink, but most people can. Maybe you'd be one of the people who can't, like Dorian, but I wouldn't bet on that. The truth is, Dorian always liked his special place in the sun, didn't he? He liked having you look up to him, having everyone look up to him. And what would he be without his power? Without his extra gifts, he'd be so much less than you, Sol. Without the Vir, he'd have no gifts, and his talent would be minuscule compared to yours. So where would that put you if you used the Vir? Even if you just used it once, just to unlock the hidden talents you don't even know you have. What could you do with that kind of power? Could you go back to Seth and make things right? Take your place with Katie on the throne? Take your place in history? I don't know. I don't really care. But you're pathetic, you magi. You can't even use magic in the dark. Really?
Lies. It's all lies.
Is it? Well then, you hold on to your weakness, your humility. But if you ever change your mind, Solonarion, this is all you have to do. The power is there, and it's waiting for you.
And then she showed him. It was simple. Instead of reaching toward a source of light, the sun, or a fire, or instead of reaching into his Glorvirden, he just had to reach toward Kali. A little twist, and it was there. An ocean of power being constantly fed from tens of thousands of sources. Solon couldn't understand it at all, but he could see the outlines. Every Caladoran prayed morning and night. The prayer wasn't empty words. It was a spell. It emptied a portion of everyone's Glorvirden into this ocean. Then Kali gave it back to those she willed, when and as much as she wanted. At heart, it was simple. A magical tax. Because so many people were born with a Glorvirden, but lacked the capability or the teaching to express it, Kali's favorites would always have ample power. And the people would never even know they were being robbed of their very vitality. That didn't explain the Vir, but it did explain why the Caladorans had always used pain and torture in their worship. Kali didn't need the suffering. She needed her worshippers to feel intense emotions. Intense emotions were what allowed marginally talented people to use their Glorvirden. Torture was simply the most reliable way to spark emotions of the right intensity. Whether the torturer and tortured and spectators felt disgusted, loathing, fear, hatred, lust, or delight made no difference. Kali could use them all.
My soul swarm will find you now, and you'll die. You emptied your Glorvirden already, didn't you?
Be gone!
Oh, you're a good one. I think I'll keep you.
Kali was in Cenaria. The Ursuls would make Ferali, and the rebels would be massacred. All his service here had been for nothing. All he had just learned was for nothing. He should have gone home to Seth 12 years ago. He'd failed. They were coming toward him. There was nothing he could do. He was bound, and the horizon was barely gray. No weapons, no magic. The Vir was his only way out. Even if it was suicide, at least he could take a lot of them with him. Maybe he could outsmart her. If he could just survive, he could fight Kali. She wasn't invincible. She wasn't a goddess. He'd talked to her. He'd understood her. He could fight her. He just needed the power to do it. Solon's heart thudded in his chest.
Oh, God. Sir, if you are there, I despise myself for praying now when I've got nothing to lose. But shit, if you just help me to live through...
Solon's prayer was interrupted as a heavy corpse fell on him. Warm blood from the corpse poured into his mouth. He almost threw up as the blood spilled over his chin, down his neck, through his beard. But he froze as he heard a foot scuff on stone nearby. A soul sworn pulled the body off him, but didn't walk away.
Look at this one, Garth.
Another screamer. Love it when they do that. Must have pissed off the men, huh? Must have been one of the first to go if they tied him up like that.
The first soulsworn stepped close and bent over Solon. The man stood and kicked Solon in the kidney. Pain lanced through him, but he didn't make a sound. The man kicked him again and again.
He's still alive. Kill him.
Solon's heart leapt into his throat. It was over. He had to grab the Vir and die.
Wait.
The thought was so calm, so simple and clear that it seemed to come from outside of him. Solon held still.
The second I hear steel, I'll...
He didn't know. He'd take the Vir, and Kali would have him.
Shit! My blade's frozen. I could have sworn I got it cleaned off.
Forget it. If he could have gotten out of the ropes, he would have when she came through.
And they walked away. The Night Angel Trilogy, Shadow's Edge Part 1, is a graphic audio production, copyright 2008, Brent Weeks, published by arrangement with Hatchet Book Group Incorporated, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010 by The Cutting Corporation Incorporated, all rights reserved. With performances by Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Azelford, Tim Getman, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Rick Rowan,
Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Troisone. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Night Angel trilogy, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
Available now in graphic audio.
Many years ago, my people, the Togairu, were conquered by the Berenice. It is a situation that cannot be allowed to continue.
I know the tale. You are to be ranger in Togai, then.
That is the land I know. I understand the ways of the great oxen and the high tundra lions, of the black diamond serpent and the wild horses. Never did I doubt that my tenure with the Tuelafar would end with my return to Togai, my land, my home, my love.
No! You must run! All of you get out, or you're all going to die! Get out! Now!
You disgrace your father! Dishonor to your name and tragedy to those who brought you in to care for you.
It was an accident.
It was the logical conclusion to your reckless course. The inevitable result of who you are, Adrian Windon. And the proof that you are no ranger and never shall be one.
Were I to raise an army tomorrow, I would turn it upon Anderblock Innes and raise the valley. I would see Lady Dasaron and every one of her taunting kin dead in the grass.
Bear witness, ye all, for on this midsummer day of God's year 840, does Gilsepony Windon take the surname of Ursel. Hail to the Queen!
Hail to the Queen!
Don't miss The Demon Wars Saga, Book 5, Ascendance, Part 1. Available now in graphic audio.
Available now in graphic audio.
How far you reckon we are from St. Louis?
I'll be there in another week just about, I'd say.
That army of yours gonna be good and healed up by then?
It's pretty much healed now. I can use it without any trouble. Just aches a little every now and then.
Well, you best be careful with it. You want to be at full strength when we get there. Killing that bastard Beaumont ain't going to be easy.
No, but it sure is going to be satisfying.
Party! Everybody, hunch cuff!
Hey, Dugan, don't you reckon it's about time you tell me what we're doing here? Hear that? Yeah, what is it?
Steamboat round the bend. What gets here? That's when the shooting starts.
Beaumont! I'm coming for you, Beaumont, you goddamn coward! I'm gonna skin you alive!
The First Mountain Man 16, Preacher's Fire. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.